I have a lot of funding for reniform nematode resistance, okay? And a lot of this is coming through USDA federal money, and I have a lot going through Cotton Foundation, Cotton Incorporated. And so a lot of this is, so one of my major objectives also was to develop reniform tolerant resistant material. On this paper, of course, you got Jim Nichols and Susan Shee, who's my right-hand people in the field work. Brian Scheffler and Jody Scheffler, when I first checked with them, I said, can you run these markers? And, you know, like, yeah, right. And we've never done that before, but we will see what we can do. And so it took a lot of discussing on this. And I want to thank Al Bell because he made some of the original crosses for us in the beginning of this project. Reniform, like I was saying earlier, is very, very important in Mississippi. We have over 20% to 30% yield losses. Not very many people know about this. And the way I was having to do it in the first time is for years, and I still continue to do that, is that I have to just put it in a hot nursery and just go out there and make selections. I did try doing yield trials in hot nematode soil, and I decided that doesn't work because the CV is so high that you can't get any results out of it. And I said, well, there has to be an easier way to try to get some of this tolerance and resistance into our breeding lines. So a couple of years, the USDA and College Station released the Lorin 1. I says, okay, well, let's try it and see how it works. This was a very interesting trip, too. Like I said earlier, screening germplasm, high population fields, that just doesn't work real well. But that was the best we had. So the integration of resistance from reniform nematodes started 2 years ago in 2007 for marker-assisted selection. These are the cross. Ted made crosses over in Starkville, and I made crosses over in Stoneville. And so these are some of the first pedigrees that we had. You can see here on the top one is also considered to have some root knot nematode tolerance to it. Most of these germplasms are Delta Pines times Texas cottons, then times DeLorean. You can see my Texas background, Ted's Texas background on these lines. These came from my program. There was one nectarless in here, and these are fairly high yielding germplasm lines. These were made by Al Bell a couple of years ago. He first started, he has all his Lorin parents numbered, and Ted sent him over Texas 110, Texas 141, and 23, and I sent him over three lines also. What they don't tell you in the beginning is that you got to keep up with your parents, P1 and your P2, number them, and then you harvest those parents when you harvest your cross. Well, it took me a year to figure out what they were wanting me to do, and so that was interesting because Brian kept saying, well, where's your parents? And they're out in the field, you know, so we went through here. If you're familiar with the Lorin crosses or the Lorin germplasm, you know they're green seed. I was told, and that these are associated with bad seed germination. And so we went ahead and hot water treated all those germplasm lines. And I did a germination test first before I did the hot water treatment. And yes, we didn't have the best germination. We did have excellent germination after we did the hot water treatment. And it was way too many, really. So we were able to plant 27 F2 and 95 back cross F2 populations with 40 different parents. And again, my guys had to go out there and tag over 3,500 plants. And so we're looking at that many plants to begin with, and that's what the Lorin has all in there. Now this is where the Lorin, the marker-assisted selection, we just took leaf samples first from each of the plants, took them over to the USDA facility where we went ahead and they isolated, just took the disc out of it. This part of it, how they isolated the DNA and ran the markers, you're really going to have to talk to Jody and Brian Scheffler on this because I gave them the material and they worked out the protocol because they wanted to work the robotics and do that many samples. They had to do more than just one sample at a time. So So they worked through that. They did a lot of preparation just to get ready to run this many samples through the machine. So what I got first back was something like this. And I said, okay, now what does this mean again? And as you can see, the top one, you got the peak. The second one, you pick up the BNL out of the lower end. And so out of each individual F2, you want to make sure you had that second peak in there. And which was very interesting. I thought it was great. You know, I said, this is what it's all about. And I really enjoyed doing this work. Well, the computer, thank goodness for computers, they went ahead and put it in a form that I could go in there with an Excel macro, or Susan did, and pick out the ones that we needed to keep. So out of, you can see the PST has 113 and 121, then the lower end has 115, 123. So we know we want everything with 115 in there. If it has both in the F2s, we got heterozygous. We wanted just the homozygous, so everything with 115 and 123 we kept in the F2 populations, but we went back to the back cross. We knew we had the 113 back in there. So this made it very easy to do marker-assisted selection, which is what we were wanting as a breeder, in order to get this reniform nematode resistance. I said, okay, we're doing well. We got nematode resistance in some lines. But, so out of this, 1,865 plants were deleted, 980 were heterozygote, 850 were homozygous out there. 308 plants were selected out of this, and only 28 of these had any mini bulls on it. So let me show you what I'm talking about here. If you can see this, the middle row here, we don't have a maybe what? Here we go. Here, this is a parent. This is our F2 row. This is another F2 row. So you saw we got a complete yield drag immediately. And so I said, all right, let's look at it a little further down. Here's our parent again. F2, you can see the complete yield drag. Our back cross, we did a lot better with. So I think for now on, we will go back with back cross material instead of going to F2s. The problem you see here, see these three plants or four plants right here in the middle? This is what most of the lower end positive plants look like. Two to three little bowls on there. And I said, we don't even need marker assisted selection for this. You could just walk out there in the field and see them. And it was pretty pitiful. And so it's been suggested that it's, but I didn't, I must say, I said I had 28 good plants. They look normal. So I figured, well, maybe they're in the greenhouse right now, and they're going to be retested for the lower end gene just to make sure they weren't missed, or it was a missed positive or whatever it is. So I thought, well, I said, this isn't going to work. This is a herbicide application. Remember, this is conventional germplasm. So there's no Roundup put on this material. So we did have quite a few herbicides put on it. I don't know if this affects it. This is what I've been told, that there might be some herbicide sensitivity to it. I don't know how we're going to get around that, as at least till we get to it in the Roundup Ready Flex part of it. But in the just conventional germplasm, we got to put all these herbicides down. I can't get enough hoe people out there to hoe that stuff, and nor will they. And so if it's something just in the plant that's going to do this, we have problems. If it's a herbicide, I mean, if it's a sensitivity, I don't know how we're going to get around it, but we'll have to figure it out. This is the fiber quality of some of the individual plants. I was quite pleased with some of the length and the strengths on these. They're still individual plants. And they've got the range. You can see the different families are affected different ways. So most of it looks pretty good. We got some lower gene turnouts again, but very good fiber quality on the lower end. So I said, at least I don't have to worry too much about getting the lower end gene. I mean, working with the fiber quality, I mean, yield at least is going to be a problem itself. So, and then also, we got the green seed issue. And we are starting to pick out about 5% of what this is really green seed. It's not delinted or naked seed. It's, we do have the white lint seed coming out of it. And so we're starting to test some of these white seeds. They are positive for the Lorin gene. So at least we can move a little bit way that way. Some people say it's not even necessary, that we can keep it green seed. I don't know. We'll figure out what they want to do with this. If we want to keep it green seed or try to convert it all over to white seed. But this last F2 population, we averaged around 5%. Even though I don't understand how we got 27% in a couple of the populations that high of white seed. But we're working with this one. Again, I don't know. We're going to work with back crosses from now on instead of going straight F2s. We've talked about, Ted and I have been talking about doing a random mating population. We need to try to break that yield drag with it. Those 28 good plants I said we had, they're in the greenhouse, and we're going to start making some back crosses this summer, winter. Also, with, if it is a Lorin, back to some of the good germplasm that's in the programs. So next year we can plant out some back cross one populations. Something we're wanting to do with Osman and the Jenkins group is look at some of these root knot nematode crosses that Ted has and see if we're also picking up some root knot nematode resistance with this. I mean, we know we had it to begin with, the initial crosses, and eventually we'll try to get a marker-assisted selection that will pick up both genes at the same time instead of doing one and then the other. But we were on a time schedule, and we couldn't figure out how to do it quickly and get it done right now. And so I says, this project is being paid to look at Lorin, and that is what we're going to do. Again, this germplasm is up in the air. It's good germplasm. I hope that Ted Wallace is going to be able to pick it up. We need to grow it in Stoneville. And so we're going to try to keep it in Stoneville because that's where the marker-assisted selection process occurs, with working with the USDA people over there. So this is another full-time project that could be a full-time person handling just the Lorin genetic improvement program or reniform resistant program. So like I said, this, I don't know what they're going to do with all the germplasm in the program, but I hope I can get it dispersed out to everybody. And if you have any questions, let me know, and I'll tell you what we did wrong, okay? So. Yes, Al.
Yeah, I just want to comment because I've got a good-sized group here. The Lorins are vulnerable to Codran and Caprol. You cannot use those herbicides with it. They will kill it just like the weed, or they will stunt
it. Is it killing the roots? Is that what it's doing?
It's stunting it. No, it inhibits photosynthesis.
So the roots are fine.
The roots.
I never pulled up the plants. That's why I'm asking.
It's inhibited, yes. But apparently, when we put Lonran into chromosome 11, we also knock out the Codran Caprol detox gene. So anything that's carrying Lonran resistance in chromosome 11 will be sensitive to that class of herbicides, the photosynthesis inhibitors. And you cannot use them with it unless you want to see stunted plants. It is, unfortunately, the perfect marker for Lorin resistance. It is the perfect marker. We looked at almost 30,000 plants this summer. There were no exceptions. We have not been able to break the two characters. In fact, I'm beginning to think they're one of the same. The same locus that was detoxing the herbicides. Now, in fact, the Lorin locus replacing it may be the one that's counteracting.
Okay.
It could also be an extremely tight linkage that we've got to look at a million plants to break. I don't know. But right now, everything we have in chromosome 11 is sensitive. We have new materials coming on in chromosome 21 that all the indications early are they will be able to be used with color and capital.
Both of them,
but
though.
They're probably a year or two away from the ratio.
If you have peaks of 115 and 123, are that combined to genes for resistance?
I don't think so. I think there was just one gene.
I know they reported one gene, but I was wondering if that was meaning.
I think that was just a marker. Is that right, Jody? Just to let us know that we're in the right chromosome?
Correct.
Yeah.
It takes both markers to identify that gene.
No, well, for the Lorin to be homozygous, you just want
have no evidence that there are two genes involved there. I saw some evidence of two pair of genes.
It's quite possible that there could be, but according to this screen with that particular 3279 marker, we only saw evidence from one, but it could be possible if you work with other markers. So say, for instance, 8636 or something else, you may detect the second marker.
I wasn't looking at markers. I was looking at population on the plant, egg masses on the plant, and I got evidence of two dominant genes, non-separation.
And that's quite possible, because here we only looked at one marker, so that may be quite possible that your resistance is due to somewhere in a different region, and that wouldn't be detected by that marker. So you could be correct.
Are you talking about the same source? What do you think the source?
Lon Ren 2.
It's one second. I think.
All right. I think we need to move on. All right. Thank you.